While we were on leave, one of the things we were praying about is, what does the next season look like? And right at the beginning, I had started reading a little on the presence of God, and just amazed how that over those weeks, God kept bringing me back and back and back and back to the presence of God. And I have become more hungry, more determined, and more persistent about the presence of God. The next season, I want to speak on the presence of God. And we're going to look at different aspects. We're going to look at it from different angles. And I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what this is going to look like. I wish I did know. Sharon asked me one night as we were praying and seeking God about his presence. She said to me, are we going to become weird as a church? And I said, I wish I could say to you that we're not. But I don't know, because I don't know what the presence of God brings. As I start to read about revivals, which is the presence of God for people corporately, some of them weren't pretty. Some of them were really not pretty. And we're going to talk about those revivals in time to come. But this I know, I am determined and I'm hungry for the presence of God. And so I want to get stuck in and talk to you a little about that and tell you of some of the things that I felt like God said and spoke about during our time away. This presence is unexplainable. And so your next question should be, if it is unexplainable, why are you trying to explain it? And I have no idea. All that I know is I want to speak about it, explore it, and find out more. Unfortunately, I wish I could download or that we could just flick a switch to experience the presence of God. But it's not going to happen. I want to start in Hebrews. In Hebrews chapter 1, if you're wanting to join in and read with me, Hebrews chapter 1, if you're wanting to follow on the screen, you're most welcome. I want to encourage you, bring your Bibles and bring a notebook. Sharon and I went to a couple of churches while we were away, and one of the outstanding features is we were the weirdos. We were the only ones. We went to one very large church. We were the only ones that carried Bibles into the church. The only ones. The preach contained, I think, two verses that they put up on the screen, and they stayed on the screen for about 10 seconds. And I looked at it, and Sharon and I looked at each other and went, we're going to encourage people to bring Bibles and read out of those Bibles. But just in case you don't have it today, we put it on the screen. Let's go. Hebrews chapter 1. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After he had provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. And the part that I want to stop at is that part in verse 3 that says, the Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being. I started to study that part and I read it in a different version. And in that version, it says, the reassured or the represented the very character of God. The Son represented the very character of God. And I thought, how does he represent the character of God? What is it speaking about? So I went back and had a look at what generally was the Greek that was following there. And I don't read Greek, but I can read a lexicon. And so it explains what that Greek is. And that Greek comes from the word character, which is the word that they use for printing. In other words, is as you read a newspaper, it has characters, same word. But it actually came from before that, when they had a press and they would press coins. And on that coin is a face. Who's on the coin? Queen Elizabeth. On our coin, it's the character of the queen. That's where the word comes from. In other words, it is taking the stamp and putting the stamp on there. It is the character. When I present this and they look at it and go, sorry, sir, we don't want this one because it's dirty, I can say, I don't care that it's dirty. It's got the queen. You need to give me what it's worth. Because the queen has determined that's what's going to happen. And as the head, she determines. Her authority is going to be stamped there. Now, this morning we sang, in your image and your likeness, and what the presence of God brings is it brings the stamp. In other words, is that just the same way as Jesus is formed in the likeness and character of God and represents that same authority, in exactly the same way he is trying to take that and put it on you. In other words, Jesus says, Matthew 28, let's jump ahead. Matthew 28, Jesus says, all authority has been given to me. I am the exact image. Now, not because you are perfectly stamped. No. Your stamping is still in the process of trying to get it like that. But now already, I give you the authority that I have. So we often say, Matthew says, go into all the world, Great Commission, go into all the world, is correct. But you have to start back a little bit that says, all authority has been given to me. Now I give to you the authority, you go and do it. And so the image of God that we're going to start to explore today is this understanding of the transformation that comes in our own lives when we're in the presence of God, is that we are stamped so that we look and we have the character of God and therefore have the fullness of the authority of God to be able to bring about that which he told us to do. Okay. So, let me say a whole heap of things, and then we're going to run through a couple, and I want to end with the scripture right at the end. Deep in the recesses of our soul lies a deep longing for the presence of God. This is true of all people, largely due to us being created in the image or character of God. This desire will make us restless and leave us seeking and hungry and unfulfilled until this longing is met. The highest calling we have is to enter his presence, that place that we should call home. But unfortunately, most of us struggle to understand this longing and to fulfill it, because rather than finding his presence, we look for exterior things that are going to fulfill us. This week, somebody gave me a book as a gift, and I can't wait to read the book. And I just skimmed through it quickly because I was very interested. And it's research that has been done as to why the generations in this last while are leaving the church. And one of the main things that's coming out of the research that they're showing is that we taught a generation to look externally for their fulfillment rather than internally. In other words, we taught them is that they should be happy. We taught them that they should have great music. We taught them that they should have exciting and lively spiritual experiences. We taught them that the church should have smoke machines and lights. We taught them that you should be able to run and be free and explore who you truly are. Instead of saying, you're never, ever going to find your fulfillment until you've been in His presence. I can't wait to read the book. St. Augustine, the Bishop of Hippo, captured the essence of this in his Confessions, if you've read them. And it says, Thou hast created us for Thyself, and we are restless until we rest fully in Thee. Revelation chapter 4, verse 11, says, You are worthy, O Lord, and our Lord and God, to receive glory and honor and power. For you created all things, and by your will they were created and have their being. And that revelation came because John was in the presence of God. For most of us, we're too busy to seek His presence. And if we do, we enjoy it for very short periods only, rather than finding it a continuous delight. And perhaps that doesn't suit you or fit you. But unfortunately and sadly, I must tell you today, it is about me. Many Christians are filled with knowledge which will leave us thirsty for Him. Longing to be in His presence and being in His presence are two completely different things. Could I say that again? Longing for His presence and being in His presence, two very different things. See, if you look at an eagle was meant to soar. It was meant to ride the currents. But if you clip an eagle's wings, it doesn't lose the desire or the ability in terms of its heart. It just stops soaring. And sadly, as eagles, many of us have our wings clipped because of sin and all of the rubbish that contaminates us, but that doesn't take away the longing and the desire that we should have. I think that there are a couple of hindrances, and I've just put three down very quickly that I think are hindrances for me specifically from being able to soar and to be able to enjoy the very presence of God. The first one is that I am morally bankrupt. But sadly, I don't always realize that. I am morally bankrupt. My problem comes is when I start to think that I'm okay. In other words, I'm not really such a bad guy. You know, I mean, like, look, sometimes, you know, things don't work out quite well. A little white lie here and there, but generally, I'm a pretty good guy. And the minute I start with that reasoning, what I'm doing is I'm raising my own righteousness and saying, actually, there's a little bit of good in me that I can bring to the table. And as soon as I do that, the Bible tells me is that I am like filthy rags before His presence. But when I recognize that there is no good thing in me and it's by His righteousness and His righteousness alone. In other words, it's His goodness and kindness and mercy that allows me to come into His presence. Something starts to change. Secondly is we want to pay for the debt we've incurred. Let me change that. I want to pay for the debt that I've incurred. When I do something wrong, I want to try and pay for it. I don't know how always, but I think prayer is a good way to start. So if I did this wrong and I pray for an hour, then surely God, you've forgiven me. If I did this wrong and I then start to do Bible study, surely you've forgiven me. And the more I do that, the more I try to work off a system that's going to pay for the things. rather than getting on my knees and saying, I have no good thing in me. The minute I start to work out deals with God, oh God, I desperately need breakthrough. I haven't had quiet time for 6 weeks, but I will this whole week, every morning for 10 minutes, if you will break through in this area. The minute I start with those kind of deals, is it becomes a religion rather than a relationship. Thirdly, is I can not smell like sin if I want to come into his presence. I cannot smell like sin. I cannot smell like sin. In other words, there can be nothing on me that smells like sin. Now listen, I want you to look at me. I'm a happy boy today. I am really happy. Okay. And I love you. I really, really do. Okay, are you hearing me? Can you just say, I'm so glad he's not angry this morning. Okay. Yeah, great. When we go to Thailand, one of the deals we have is there's no complaining. And the reason is because we don't want to see the Thai people to see, oh, that's what happens. Gee, that's exactly the same as we are. There's no difference. So why must we accept their Jesus when we're exactly the same? So we just say, if you're going to complain, I'm going to warn you 3 times. I'm going to take you to the airport, put you on the plane, back home again. Oh, are we okay with that? Yes, everyone's fine. We all go to Thailand. Nobody complains. We come home again. It's good. And Monica has challenged me over and over and said, so how come you would do that in Thailand, but in our home we're allowed to? And I thought because we won't have a church. So I've never done it, but we're going to start. We're going to start now. Now I realize we can't just kick everyone out. Oh, you complain, get out of the church. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to be gracious and loving and kind. But I'm going to ask, if you are unhappy, please don't do it. Please don't. If you are on children's church and children's church makes you unhappy, please don't do children's church. Please don't. Please don't. Really? You say, well, who's going to run children's church then? No, Sharon and I will. Sharon and I. You know what? Everybody wants to preach, so we're not short on preachers. We'll have preachers. Don't worry. We'll have guys preaching. But Sharon and I will run children's church because we can be happy in that place. If you say, but I don't like setup. You know, there's this setup thing. No. If it makes you happy, if this is like, I have gifts. I can't wait to live this out. Where can I go? What can I do? I want to have an opportunity to set up. Then you come. Sharon and I are going to have a chat to a couple afterwards. And we're going to say, do you want to lead the setup team? We've been praying about it and saying, what happens if they say no? And inside of us, there's kind of a little bit of a, we hope they're going to say no. Because we want a chance. We want a chance. We want to head up. And we're going to phone one person. And we're going to say, are you happy? Do you like setup? You really want to do it? Come and join us. We're going to do it this week. And then maybe somebody else comes and says, I want to turn. Say, come and join us next Sunday. And we're going to do it because we love it and we enjoy it. And if you complain, you're not allowed to do it anymore. Not allowed to do it. Worship team. You can be on the worship team because you love it. He said, oh, I don't want to go all the way down. I have to drive all the way down to Vessel and Jolinda. No, you're not allowed to do it. Not allowed to do it. You know why? Because if you complain, you bring the curse of God on us. And I don't want to live under the curse. I want to live under the blessing. I want you to live out your gifting because you realize it's a gift from God. And I want to bring it to the table. I want to put it down and say, God, bring it into your presence. Oh God, thank you for this gift. Thank you for this beautiful gift that you gave me, that I have muscles and arms and I can pack a chair out. Oh God, you're good. You're good. You're good. I want to come into your presence. And you say, Mark, you've just signed the death warrant. This church is going to shrink. I think it is. I think our church is going to shrink. But I'm trusting God that as his presence comes, there's going to be more and more people that say, we heard that there's the presence of God. At a little church called Cross Culture, we're going there. We're going there. Because I'm desperate. I'm desperate. Colossians chapter 1 is up there on the screen. I'm still happy. Are you okay with that? I'm still happy. I hope you didn't think, oh my goodness, he's angry. No. You missed it. I'm really, really excited and happy because I want his presence. Colossians chapter 1 verse 15 says, the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things. And in him all things hold together. I want to tell you, unless we go into his presence, we will not know that or experience it. It'll be a head knowledge, and we will not grow into that image and likeness it speaks about. Sadly, for many, we've lost the sense of majesty. And part of that is because we no longer value man. Can I say that again? We no longer value man. Because we have a low view of man, it results in a low view of God. You see, I have always taught, because we have a low view of God, we have a low view of man. But I'm realizing it's the other way around too. When we have a low view of man, we have a low view of God. And part of that, as I started to read and study, I've been just amazed at this whole story. You go back to Galileo. And you read from Galileo. So Galileo, remember, was the one who was saying that the stars and this whole thing's moving. In other words, this is not fixed the way that we thought it was. And everyone had thought that it was a fixed system. We have a system that is static. And Galileo started to show how things revolve and planets. And they started to blow their minds and just go, hold on a moment. If that is not true, then is God true? Because we've always believed that. Then came Darwin. And Darwin said, no, from an amoeba, from a cell, it grew, and then it became a bird, and then it became a monkey, and then it became you. And if it grew and it became all of those things, then is God really true? Because God didn't create us. Effectively, I just evolved, so there's no God. The third one was Einstein. Einstein came out and said, you know what, there are whole solar systems, and actually the earth is not the center. And the whole church did a whole double take. You mean we're not the center of the universe? You mean it doesn't all revolve around us? Surely if God created us, we'd be the center of the universe. Everything would revolve around us, but instead, we're just one of the little pieces in the whole bigger picture. And you watched how the process of the church and the believers started to devolve to the point where we're now in what they call a post-Christian era, which says, I don't really know what the truth is. In fact, I don't think there is a truth. I make up the truth as I go. For us, we want to say there is a truth. There is one truth, and his name is Jesus. And God didn't send us a whole heap of truths. He sent us a logos. He sent us a logic. He sent us a textbook wound up into one. And it wasn't a book, and it wasn't a whole lot of laws. It was a person, and his name was Jesus. And he said, unless you accept him, you cannot come into my presence, you cannot know my presence, and you will remain empty and searching forever. I want to take you through very quickly six things that I felt that God spoke to us about the church And let me unpack them for you quickly. Number one, there should be a slide that comes up. There we go. The first one is what do I have to offer? What do I have to offer? And I want to say absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Unless it's through God, we have nothing to offer. We have to realize that it is God's grace and God's gifting that we bring to the table. It is not ours. It is not ours. In fact, we don't have the right to make the call on yes and no. God has that right because he gave it to us. You have the right to submit or rebel, not to say yes or no. And what we're going to explore is, if I have nothing to bring, then how come he gave me gifts? And how do my gifts fit together with what he's called me to? Secondly, is I want to speak in time ahead, and not today on any of these six, is what is this thing about being Spirit-led? How come we don't have a map? How come we don't know what's going to happen in 3 months' time? Can we not put a strategic plan together about what this church is going to look like? And can I not draw a flow chart of what my life is going to look like and how this is going to unfold and unpack? And I want to say to you, no, you can't. In exactly the same way as the people were in the desert and they left and Moses led them and he took them from one place to the other, and not even Moses knew. He knew that there was a destination called the Promised Land, but for the rest had no clue. We were going to do it and make it up day to day. And I want to tell you, we're going to be making a lot of this up day to day as God leads us. Third area is rhythms and disciplines. And I truly believe that there are rhythms that we should have as individuals. One of the things that I've not done well and I've not modeled well is the rhythm of keeping a Sabbath. And by that, I don't mean a day, I mean a time when I would dedicate it to God and I would have it as a rhythm. And I haven't modeled that well. And unfortunately, that led to a point where I was near burnout when we went on leave. And I prayed about that. And God said, but you don't keep my rhythm. I've set in place a weekly rhythm that you should have. You don't keep the rhythm to come into my presence on a weekly basis. You fill that time with social time, family time, all sorts of time, and you call it your Sabbath, but it is not your Sabbath because you've not been in my presence. Daily rhythms where I pray daily. Rhythms that I have about brushing my teeth twice a day. Those things I don't even question anymore. They just set as rhythms. And we have those rhythms. And we want to talk about what those rhythms are going to be like for us as a church. What are the rhythms we're going to have? And you're going to see in the newsletter that comes out shortly and the calendar, there are new rhythms we're going to set in place. And we're going to start looking at how that looks for us as a church. Number four, I want to speak about appetites very quickly. Is there appetites that we have? And unless we're able to discipline and control those appetites, we are going to struggle. We really, really are going to struggle. The people of Israel struggled. Esther called them to fasting. And in the fasting, God met with them and they had breakthrough. I was really, really struggling with this thing. I'd for probably the last week of our long service leave, I'm just praying, oh God, you've called us to this thing called your presence, and I don't even know that I'm hungry enough for your presence. But how do I go and stand before the church and say, okay, all of you, you should all be hungry for his presence? Do you all understand that? Feel it? Hungry? Okay, now you're hungry. I mean, it's just stupid. It doesn't happen. How do we do this? And I'm praying, oh God, would you speak to me? Would you speak to me? One morning I put on Ravi Zacharias on the way to work, and Ravi's busy speaking about appetites, and he says, you know what happens is in our natural, we have appetites, and when we start to discipline those appetites, they break through into the spirit realm, and things start to happen in the spirit realm. I'm thinking, what? What are you talking about? He said, let me give you an example. He said, if you want to be hungry for God and for the presence of God, you have to be hungry in yourself. So fast. He said, when you start fasting, you'll become hungry. And when you become hungry, you become hungry for the presence of God. I switched it off right there. I think he said, thank you, Jesus. Thank you that you've spoken to me. So you know what's coming? You know what's coming? So today I want to call for the first tithe. I don't want to call for a fast. I want to call you to tithe. Okay. I'm going to call you to tithe because we're going to discipline our appetite so that we can enjoy the presence of God. Are you ready for the tithe? Could I ask you to tithe on your social media? So install an app on your phone. Let it track how much time you spend on social media. And then just work out a tenth of that time is to go and lie on your face before God and cry out for his presence. So, I mean, that's not bad because most of you only spend about 10 minutes on social media a day. It's about a minute. Just, God, just a minute. Call for your presence. I'm done. I'm asking you to tithe. Would you tithe? And I'm calling social media, all of the social media, Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, social media. Are we cool? Number five, the opposite spirit. The opposite spirit. And we've started to talk as a leadership and say, what is it that we see in our day? What is it that we see in our day? And what do we hear? What do we hear? Let me give you a couple of things that I think we see in our day. I think people are overwhelmed, very overwhelmed by all the things that are happening. People are very, very tired, and people are very busy. Okay, very tired, always. When I speak to people, oh, I'm so tired, I'm really exhausted, I'm really tired. Those are the words that often come. And then the third is gee, I'm busy. I gave the example, I have at least one online meeting a week, and I will have people from every state, so 8 people online, you can see all their faces, and then they do a quick snap around, so how are things going in the Northern Territories? Oh, we're busy. Oh, my goodness, it's incredible. We're so busy, so busy. Okay, New South Wales, how are things going? Oh, busy. We're more busy than Northern Territory. We're busy, definitely more busy. Victoria, oh, New South Wales, I don't know what they're talking about. We are the busiest. And they all bring out their trophies and they polish them and they show how busy they are. Western Australia is always last. And for the last 3 months, I've been practicing this. Every time they get to me, they go, Western Australia, how is it? I say, very relaxed. We're so laid back. I said, listen, I just went to go and put a shirt on just so that I could be smart for this meeting. I had T-shirts and boardies on. I've just come off the beach. Sorry, guys, I can't stand up, so you're going to see my boardies. And everyone just starts laughing because they realize how silly this whole little exercise that's taken 5 minutes online has been because we're all bragging about how busy we are. I want to ask that we start moving in the opposite spirit, that we're not tired, that we're not overwhelmed, and we're not busy. Because God did not destine us to be that way. He did not design us to be that way. And if we're in his presence, it will not be that way. Number six, prayer. Prayer. I want to call for prayer in a different way. I want to ask in the morning when we get in there to pray, we've always prayed from 9 until 20 past 9. We're not going to do that anymore. We're going to pray from 8:45 until 9:15. And we're going to get on our faces before God if we have to, or we're going to stand if we have to. We're going to do whatever it takes that we have to, but we're going to start to cry out for his presence to come in our meeting. Now, if you are late and you are come after 8:45, I'm going to ask, please don't come in. Please don't disturb the Holy Spirit, dove of God, that comes to rest in that prayer meeting and starts to speak. If you're here by 8:45 and the doors are still open, rush in. If you arrive and the doors are closed, we're going to put a sign on the door that says, please don't come in. please don't disturb the presence of God. You say, I'm going to come and watch. I want to see Mark on his face. No, please don't come and watch. Do that. Don't come and watch. Okay, it's not, no longer is prayer going to be a spectator sport. Okay, it's going to be a participator sport. So if you're going to come to the prayer meeting, it's going to be half an hour. Come, bring a towel with you because the floor's so dirty in there. So that you can lie. There are going to be mats as well. You can go and lie on a mat, prostrate before God, and cry out. Maybe you need to kneel. Maybe you need to lie on your back. I don't know what it is. Maybe God's just saying stand. But whatever it is, in there, we're going to cry to God. Oh God, we desperately need your presence. We are desperate for your presence, oh God. I cannot play church. I cannot. If we're going to just do the little church thing and we sing along Christian karaoke, I get up, motivate you a little bit, slap you around the ears a bit, we all go home. I am over it. I'm over it. I want the presence of God. On Friday nights, we're going to start praying. And wherever we have those prayer meetings, we're trusting for a venue, by the way. Trusting God. Oh God, new year, can we move into our own venue? Because one of the things in that new venue is I'm desperate for a prayer room. I'm desperate for a prayer room. Andre's going to install a little keypad thing for us, and we're going to give you a code so you can go there 24/7. You can get into the prayer room, get on your face, cry out before God. Oh God, your presence, your presence, your presence. But our prayer meeting on a Friday night, we're not going to do the thing for an hour. I cannot promise you an hour. For that prayer meeting, you come when you're ready and you leave when you're ready. I think it might be a rolling thing until the morning. I don't know. But I think that there's going to, I don't know what it looks like. This is all I know, is the agenda is cleared. We're not praying about 50 things. We're praying, oh God, in your presence, we want to be transformed into your likeness. Let me close with a story. Luke chapter 8, if I remember it correctly, is the story of Jairus. And Jairus is standing and calling to Jesus, oh, Jesus, would you come to my house? Would you heal my daughter? And as he's busy calling, they come and they whisper in his ear, leave Jesus alone, your daughter's dead. And as this whole thing is busy unfolding, there is a secondary act that kind of almost sneaks its way into the Bible. A little story that is almost of no significance, but it's of massive significance. It's a lady with the issue of blood. And that lady comes into the crowd, which she should never have come into because by law she was unclean and should not have been there. But she presses in through the crowd quietly, and she's saying to herself, if I can just touch him, if I can just touch him, I don't even have to touch his body, if I can just touch his clothes, if I can touch his clothes, I'm going to be made whole. If I can touch his clothes, I'm going to be made whole. And she presses in through the crowd, crawls that last little bit, and grabs the hem of his garment. And Jesus is in this massive throng of people, bustling and pressing. And he's busy looking at Jairus. And he's saying, Jairus, hang in there, buddy. Hang in there. Don't listen to them. I'm going to come to your house. Your daughter's going to be okay. He stops. And he says, who touched me? And they start to look at him and they go, what the hang are you talking about? There are a gazillion people here that touched you. And he says, no. No, no, no. Somebody touched me and power left out of me. Power went out of me. Who was it? This little lady that started to back up steps forward and says, it was me. Because I knew if I touch the hem of your garment, I'm going to be healed. And Jesus bends down to her and says, woman, your faith has made you whole. You know what I realize is that there are people who sit here with us week after week after week who are lonely, who are removed, who feel distant, who have broken relationships, who are unclean, who have a past that haunts you, who are sick. And I want to tell you, I love you, love you, love you, but I can do nothing for you. I'm asking you to come with me because I'm pressing through the crowd. I want to touch the hem of his garment. Because I want you to know there is nothing that this church can do is try and sort out your problem. You can blame it and complain against it and talk about my leadership as much as you like. It's not going to help and it's not going to change it. I'm asking you, please come with me on a journey. Let's get down on our knees and we press through the crowd and grab a hold of the corner of his garment if that's all we can get to. So that you can be healed, so that you can be set free, so that you can be liberated from your social situation, so that you can have friends, so that you can be included, so that you can feel as though you're connected, so that you can have hope in life again. Come with me. I want to touch the hem of his garment. Could the worship team come? I want to sing in his presence. In his presence. Would you bow your head with me?